dim by ripple affording a checkered light. The gay jolly tars pass the word for a tipple and a toast for to Saturday night. Some sweetheart or wife he loved as his life, he dreamt and he wished he could hail her. But the standing toast that pleased the most was the wind that blows on a ship that goes. And alas, the love's a sailor.
Look, Eveline! Over here! No, this way!
I'm nearly there, Frank.
Look, this way! There you are. Here, take my hand. Well, we made it to the station.
It's so crowded, I thought I'd lost you for a moment.
Let's see. No. I think we have a little bit of time.
Oh, that's good.
Though we should make our way over to the north wall.
There are so many soldiers. Ow!
Watch your bag there, soldier.
Sorry, miss. Didn't mean to.
It's all right.
Oh, look. Poppins. Through the shed doors.
Is that the boat?
Oh, we take that one to Liverpool. Then tomorrow, we're on a ship to Argentina. Oh, it's all booked, Poppins.
Can we stop for a moment, Frank? I just need to catch my breath.
Well, of course. Now, here, Eveline, we can stand by this corner. It's better.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, when you're ready, we'll go over and wait there by the north wall.
I just need a moment, Frank.
Have you ever been to Buenos Aires, Poppins?
What?
I know. I'm just teasing you. You'll be fine, my dear. We cross to Liverpool, and by morning we'll be on the sea, steaming towards South America. We'll be husband and wife before you know it. And you won't mind the crossing, but if you do, I'll be there. I've seen many a strong man grow weak in the knees on the sea, but I don't suspect that you'll have any trouble, Poppins. And never mind if you do. Come, Eveline, we must move over to the north wall.
All right, Frank.
Now, take my hand now. We don't want you to get lost. There, we'll be fine here for a bit. If we take that boat over, then we sail on a ship, the Highland Mary.
He held her hand.
Then we travelled to Corunna.
She knew that he was speaking to her, saying something about the passage over and over again.
Recife, Salvador,
the station was full of soldiers with brown baggages. Through the wide doors of the sheds, she caught another glimpse of the black mass of the boat, lying in beside the quay wall with illuminated portholes.
Montevideo, then Buenos Aires.
She answered nothing. She thought of earlier. Earlier in the day, when at her window at home, she watched the evening invade the avenue. Her head leaned against her window curtains, and in her nostrils was the odor of dusty cretonne. Outside her window, few people passed. The man out of the last house passed on his way home. She heard his footsteps clacking along the concrete pavement, and afterwards crunching on the cinder path before the new red houses. One time there used to be a field there, in which they used to play every evening with other people's children. Then a man from Belfast bought the field and built houses in it. Not like their little brown houses, but bright brick houses with shining roofs. The children of the avenue used to play together in that field. The Devines, the Waters, the Duns. Little Kyo, the cripple. She and her brothers and sisters. Ernest, however, never played. He was too grown up. Her father used to often hunt them in out of the field with his blackthorn stick. But usually, little Kyo used to keep nix and call out when he saw her father coming. Still, they seemed to have been rather happy. Her father was not so bad then, and besides, her mother was alive.
Come along, have a bit of something to eat. It's not every day we have a picnic. Oh, it's splendid here. We should come more often. I don't know of a better spot than the Hill of Howth. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing now? Give it back. Oh, heavens, will you look at your father with my bonnet on his head?
Oh, I don't know a better spot than the Hill of Howth. Come along, everyone.
That was a long time ago. But then there were the other times.
Harry, Ernest, get over here.
Leave the boys be now.
Stay out of it.
They didn't do anything.
I said mind your own business. Ernest, Harry. Well, it's a wonder those legs of yours work at all, if you can't come when I call you. So where is it? Where's the teapot? Where did you put it, Harry? Ernest?
We didn't touch it, Father.
And I suppose the piece of it I found by the rug crawled on its own. I didn't know porcelain made a show of it by animating itself. Ernest, now.
We don't know where it is. We never touched it, Father.
And I suppose that means I should do nothing about it. Nothing about it at all.
Leave him be.
Ow!
No! I said let him be.
What did you say?
No, Father, don't. Don't hit her.
Ah, God!
I said mind your own business, woman.
That was a long time ago. Eveline and her brothers and sisters were all grown up. Her mother was dead. Tizzy Dunn was dead too. And the Wathers had gone back to England. Everything changes. Now she was going to go away like the others. To leave her home. Home? She looked around the room, reviewing all its familiar objects which she had dusted once a week for so many years, wondering where on earth all the dust came from. Perhaps she would never see again those familiar objects from which she had never dreamed of being divided. And yet, during all those years, she had never found out the name of the priest whose yellowing photograph hung on the wall above the broken harmonium, beside the coloured print of the promises made to Blessed Margaret Mary Alacoque. Eveline had consented to go away, to leave her home. Was that wise? She tried to weigh each side of the question. In her home, anyway, she had shelter and food. She had those who she had known all her life about her. Of course, she had to work hard, both in the house and at business. What would they say of her in the stores when they found out that she'd run away with a fellow? Say she was a fool, perhaps, and her place would be filled up by advertisement. Miss Gavin would be glad.
Miss Eveline Hill, don't you see those ladies are waiting?
Yes, Miss Gavin.
Look lively, Miss Hill, please.
She would not cry many tears leaving the stores. But in her new home, in a distant, unknown country, it would not be like that. Then she would be married. She, Eveline. People would treat her with respect then.
Eveline.
Hello, Frank.
Come, Eveline, we don't want to be late.
Shh, Frank, don't let Miss Gavin hear you.
And why not? There's nothing improper for a fellow to take a girl to the theatre. And in good seats. Not the balcony, mind
you. I'm nearly done. Be off with you. Well, wait outside for a moment. I'll be out soon.
All right. But don't give them another extra minute. Miss Gavin is lucky to have you here, you know.
Be off.
And I'll tell her that myself.
Miss Hill? Miss Hill?
I've completed my time, Miss Gavin.
Oh, not by my size. There's much to put away. You don't want to leave it here for Mary to do, do
well,
you?
Well, I would stay longer, but I have a gentleman waiting. We're going to the theatre.
That's none of my concern now, is it?
No, Miss Gavin, but I don't often leave when my time is up. And tonight I just thought I would sleep.
Well, go ahead. I suppose it can wait. But you can come in a little earlier tomorrow to make it up.
All right, Miss Gavin. Yes, Miss Gavin. Thank you, Miss Gavin. Good night.
Hey, she didn't look happy.
Miss Gavin, how could she look any other way? She's an unhappy person in an unhappy life.
And you?
Well, let's see. A few weeks ago...
Oh, has it been that long? Oh, everything with you seems so new. Oh,
don't be romancing me so early in the evening.
And why not? It's a beautiful night. I'm with a beautiful girl.
Frank.
Hey, let's walk. It's not that far.
Sure, that would be nice.
Your arm, my dear. There you go now. That's where it belongs.
Do you remember the first night? The first time I saw you?
At the house?
At your lodging.
Ah.
You were standing at the gate.
You remember where I stood?
Let's see. There you were. Your cap was pushed back in your head. And your hair had tumbled forward over your face.
Oh, I must have looked like a right...
You looked like a man I wanted to meet.
I see.
Your face all bronze. Your shoulders so broad.
My face is red as a beet now.
It becomes you, Frank.
Well, then I'll try to be more embarrassed around you more often.
Only
I'm too proud. Too proud of the fact that you let me see you, Miss Eveline Hill. Let me meet you after your work. Let me walk you home every evening. Let me get to know you, care for you.
And fancy that. I thought we hadn't reached the theatre yet, but here you are, acting up a storm as if you're before the footlights.
Oh, Eva, you know me better than that by now.
I suppose.
I've been nearly around the world. Well, at least a bit of it. And it took me coming back here to find someone. To find you.
Well, here
we are.
Well, Frank, if we don't go in soon, you'll have wasted the tickets on such sentiment.
Sentiment?
Stored up, I don't doubt, from too much time at sea.
No doubt.
And seeing as you have already got the tickets, I don't want to miss... Well, what is it we're seeing?
The Bohemian Girl.
The Bohemian Girl.
I could just whistle the tunes right here.
Oh, Frank.
I could, you know.
No doubt. I suppose you could do anything you put your mind to, my dear Frank. I suppose you could make dreams come true if you put your mind to it.
No doubt.
I dreamt that suited
Frank. That was delightful. Thank you.
May I walk you home?
You may.
Even though I'm not a Polish nobleman.
Well, I'm surely not the daughter of a count.
Well, they did live happily ever after.
After a lot of singing.
Well, if that's what it takes. Now, oh, let's see.
Oh, no, Frank.
let me see it all. The moon on the ocean was dimmed by a ripple of hoarding a checkered light. But now, some sweetheart or wife he loved as his life, each drank and wished he could hail her. But the standing toast that pleased the most was the wind that blows and the ship that goes. And alas, that loves a sailor.
Shh. You'll wake up the house.
Oh, let them wake up. Let them be roused, Poppins. Poppins. That's what I'll call you, my Poppins.
Oh,
my Poppins, my Eveline, my lass. That... Do you love a sailor?
Frank,
I'll pick you up tomorrow. Dinner.
Yes, of course. Good night, Frank.
Good night.
I had a lovely time.
Poppins.
It was an excitement for her to have a fellow. And then she had begun to like him.
Well, you haven't touched much of your food. We could go somewhere else.
No, I was just thinking.
Oh, faraway places.
The farthest place that can be.
Sometimes when I'm on a ship, it seems like the very end of the earth is just on the horizon.
I don't know if I could stand at that kind of life, being on a boat so long.
I'm used to it. I started as a deck boy.
As a boy, that young?
A pound a month on the Allan Line to Canada, mostly. Let's see, there was the Aragon, the Pavonia, the Paris... I remember the Tycho, Pascal. I worked for Lamport and Holt for a time. I was even on the Dresden.
Oh, that horrible ship, that shameful ship.
Ah, Poppins. I've sailed through the Straits of Magellan. I even came across the Patagonians.
Oh, Frank.
Yes, like Magellan himself. There we were, one day, without anyone expecting it, we saw a giant on the shore in Argentina.
Frank.
Now, he was quite naked. Well, he was. He was completely naked. And he danced, leapt and sang. And while he sang, he threw sand and dust on his head.
Why did he do such a thing?
I don't know. But our captain sent one of the men toward the giant, giving him orders to leap and sing just as the giant did.
And did the man do it?
Well, he did. He danced and sang in order to reassure the giant and to show him friendship. Then our shipmate, still dancing, slowly led the giant where the captain and the rest of the crew awaited.
Were you frightened?
No, not in the least. And when the great giant was before us, he began to marvel and, I think, was afraid himself. He raised one enormous finger upward as he believed that we all came from heaven.
Frank, I don't believe it.
It's all true. Oh, the giant was so tall that the tallest of us only came up to his waist. And after he pointed to the sky, the giant then...
A child's story, giants in Argentina. And is this where you'd like to take me?
There's nothing to worry about. Wherever we go, I'll protect you.
Oh, will you now? And who will protect you when you come and meet my father?
Is he a giant?
Frank.
Well, when is such a thing to happen?
On Sunday coming.
Oh, Sunday coming, let's see. Maybe I can find one of the Argentine giants to accompany me. I heard there's one living here in Dublin. Mm.
He must be quite a magician, a giant living in Dublin that no one has seen him.
You know, he keeps to himself.
I see.
He has a friend, I can tell. It's very secret, who brings him food and drink.
Might this friend be a sailor?
He might.
And might this sailor live on the main road, who came home from his home in Buenos Aires back to the old country for a holiday?
And met a girl who makes him feel at sea each time he sees her. Makes him feel like he's breathing for the first time. The freshest air, the might of the wind at his back. A girl he wants to scoop up in his arms and never let go.
Bring your giant on Sunday, my love.
just in case.
Oh, all right, now. We'll both be there.
And just make sure the giant has some clothes on.
Oh, I'm not sure he has any.
Of course I know about it. The whole street knows about it. Cavorting about town with them. Evelyn.
Father, there's nothing wrong with Frank.
You're not to see him again.
I will, and so will you. He's coming here tomorrow.
He won't set foot in this house. I know these sailor chaps.
He will, and there's nothing more to it.
Well, where's the week's money? Harry's not done his share.
I've given you everything I've earned, and Harry does what he can.
Church decorating? What kind of business is that? If Ernest...
Ernest is dead, Father.
Don't bring that up to me. And you have no head for business at all. The way you squander your money. I'll tell you this, I'm not going to give you my hard-earned money. The way you throw it about.
And what about the money for Sunday dinner? Is the dinner to appear out of thin air?
Don't you talk to me like that, Evelyn. If it weren't for your dead mother, I'd have minded.
A mind of what?
Evelyn's thoughts wandered still. As she continued to peer out the window, she thought how she would not be treated as her mother had been. Even now, she sometimes felt herself in danger of her father's violence. She knew it was that had given her the palpitations. When they were growing up, he had never gone for her, like he used to go for Harry and Ernest, because she was a girl. But latterly, he had begun to threaten her and say what he would do to her, only for her dead mother's sake. But now she had nobody to protect her. Ernest was dead, and Harry was nearly always down somewhere in the country. Besides, the invariable squabble for money on Saturday nights had begun to weary her unspeakably.
Well, here, Evelyn, take this. Should be enough. Well, don't you have any intention of getting to market?
After holding the money in her hands, she had to rush out as quickly as she could and do the marketing, holding her black leather purse tightly in her hand as she elbowed her way through the crowds and returned home late under a load of provisions. She had hard work to keep the house together. It was hard work, a hard life. But now that she was about to leave it, she did not find it a wholly undesirable life. She was about to explore another life with Frank. Frank was very kind, manly, open-hearted. She was to go away with him by the night boat to be his wife and to live with him in Buenos Aires, where he had a home waiting for her.
I suppose you meet many girls like Evelyn, wherever tis you go.
No, sir, I wouldn't say that.
Without a real home. That's what being a sailor is all about. No roots, no cares, no family.
Father, Frank is a...
What is it you do? Carry bags for the immigrants? Is that it?
No, sir. I work for a shipping company out of Argentina. I have a home there.
A home there? Something wrong with where you're from?
No.
Something wrong with Dublin?
Well, it's...
What? You're ashamed of where you were born.
It's had its day, I believe.
Had its day? Do you listen to him? And who are you to say whether it's had its day? So high and mighty?
I've seen other parts of the world, and I think...
And that makes you the judge? Dublin's not good enough for you, the place where your roots run?
No.
You see, Evelyn, Dublin's not good enough for this sailor.
That's not what I said.
There's no reason to argue about it, Father.
Well, tell that to your friend here. Coming to this house to speak ill and...
Look, I never said anything of the kind. I don't deny I think Dublin has seen better days, but
where are you to come in here as a foreigner, a dirty foreigner?
Father!
I am of this place as anyone on these shores, but I'll not say all is green when it's turned brown and
you'll
black
not say anything in this house.
No, Father.
No, not a word to my daughter. You're not to see her again. Not again. Now leave.
It's Dublin's fate. I pity Dublin's fate if the likes of you are its defender.
Get out!
Frank!
Evelyn, over here.
I feel odd meeting you here.
I don't want you to have any trouble with your father. And last week, there's no point in stirring it all up. No one will see us here. Not many come to this cafe.
it's not fair having to be so secret.
It won't have to be that way.
I don't know.
Oh, Eveline, there's nothing for you here. You were strong and kind and generous. I never met anyone with a bigger heart than you.
But I...
Look, there's a world where you can be who you are. My Eveline, where you're longed for, my darling.
Oh, Frank.
I'm not much for fancy words and all, but I know what's in my heart and soul. I can't see any picture except for the one we're both in hand, and if you are of the same vision, if your eyes can see as mine do, Eveline, will you come home with me and be my wife?
Oh, my Frank, my lovely Frank. I will.
There was Eveline in her room as the evening deepened in the avenue. The white of two letters in her lap grew indistinct. One was to Harry, the other was to her father. Ernest had been her favourite, but she liked Harry too. She noticed her father was becoming old lately. He would miss her. Sometimes he could be very nice. Sometimes he would care for her.
Come, it's a bit warmer by the fire. The warm will do you some good.
Oh, thank you, Father. I'll be fine.
You've come down with something.
I'll be fine.
No, put the blanket around you. You don't want anything worse to come your way.
I'll be fine.
Well, we'll see to it that you are. Here, I made you some toast.
Thanks.
You can't fight it without something in your stomach.
I'll be better tomorrow, I'm sure.
You'll be better if you listen to your father now. So, here, sit by me. That's right. You can come closer, I won't bite. You may want to be near, since I'll be reading you these ghost stories.
Oh, my book! I remember that book.
You put your mind on nothing more. Now there, let's see. This is by Major MacGregor. He says, in the end of 1871, I went over to Ireland to visit a relative living in a square in the north side of Dublin. In January 1872, the husband of my relative fell ill.
That one.
Not all that frightening. Mm.
Father, read the one about the priest.
Well, I don't know, Eveline. I don't know if there's any such kind in this book. Oh, this is the one you mean. Here it is. A truly terrifying sight was witnessed by a clergyman in a schoolhouse a good many years ago.
Yeah, that's the one.
This cleric was curate of a Dublin parish, but resided with his parents some distance out of town in the direction of Malahide. It not infrequently happened that he had to hold meetings in the evenings, and on such occasions, as his home was so far away, and as the modern conveniences of tram cars was not then known, he used to sleep in the schoolroom, a large bare room where the meetings were held. He had made a sleeping apartment for himself by placing a pole across one end of the room, on which he had rigged up two curtains, which when drawn together met in the middle. One night, he had been holding some meeting, and when everybody had left, he locked up the empty schoolhouse and went to bed. Scarcely had he got into bed when he became conscious of some invisible presence, and then he saw the curtains agitated at one end, as if hands were grasping them on the outside. In an agony of terror, he watched these hands groping along outside the curtains till they reached the middle. The curtains were then drawn a little apart, and a face peered in, an awful, evil face, with an expression of wickedness and hate upon it which no words could describe. It looked at him for a few moments, then it drew back again, and the curtains closed. The clergyman had sufficient courage left to leap out of bed and make a thorough examination of the room, but as he expected, he found no one. He dressed himself as quickly as possible, walked home, and never again slept a night in that schoolroom.
Well, I wouldn't sleep in that room.
Evelyn? Are you asleep? You rest now, my child.
Evelyn's time was running out. She had to meet Frank, but she continued to sit in her room by the window, leaning her head against the window curtain, inhaling the odor of dusty cretonne. Down far in the avenue, she could hear a street organ playing. She knew the air. Strange that it should come that very night to remind her of her promise to her mother when her mother was dying.
Please, rest, Mother. You have to rest.
Evelyn, you have to promise me.
What, Mother?
It's all up to you.
Mother,
it's all up to you, Evelyn, to keep the home together as long as you can. You have to promise me.
But you will be fine, Mother. You have
promise
to...
Promise me, Evelyn. Promise me.
I told you, go away. Take your plane and go away.
Evelyn, promise me. You must promise.
Mother, rest. Sit back. You have to rest.
Terrafons are on.
Damned Italians. Coming over here.
Terrafons are on. Terrafons are on.
Father, do Terrafons something. You have to do something.
Terrafons are on. Terrafons are on. Terrafons are on.
As Evelyn stood in her room and remembered her mother dying, the pitiful vision of her mother's life laid its spell on the very quick of her being. That life of commonplace sacrifices, closing in final craziness. She stood up in a sudden impulse of terror. Escape! She must escape! Frank would save her. He would give her life, perhaps love too. Why should she be unhappy? She had a right to happiness. Frank would take her in his arms, fold her in his arms. He would save her.
But the standing toast that pleased the most was the wind that blows and the ship that goes and the lass that loves a sailor. Ah, that will be our air on the way down, Poppins.
Evelyn and Frank were both among the swaying crowd at the north wall in the station. Frank held her hand as Evelyn felt her cheek grow pale and cold, and out of a maze of distress, she prayed to God to direct her, to show her what was her duty. If she went, tomorrow she would be on a ship with Frank, steaming toward Buenos Aires. Could she draw back after all he had done for her? Her distress awoke a nausea in her body, and she kept moving her lips in silent prayer. A bell clanged upon her heart. She felt Frank seize her hand.
Come, Evelyn, we're ready. It's time to go. Look, just stay behind me. I'll lead you through the crowd. Look, Evelyn, come. Look, come with me.
All the seas of the world tumbled about her heart. He was drawing her into them. Look, he would drown her.
Evelyn!
She gripped now with both hands at the iron railing.
Evelyn, come with me now. Evelyn, now we have to make the boat. Evelyn! Look, excuse me, sir, please. I have to get back to her.
All right.
Look, Evelyn! No, come!
It was impossible. Her hands clutched the iron in frenzy.
Evelyn, please, I can't go back for
move
you.
Move on, sir, move along. You can't stand here.
Evelyn! Come now, Evelyn! Evie!
Amid the seas, she sent out a cry.
No!
No, Evelyn! Oh, please!
Frank rushed beyond the barrier and called to her to follow. He was shouted at to go on, but he still called to her.
Evelyn!
She set her white face to him. Passive, like a helpless animal, Her eyes gave him no sign of love, or farewell, or recognition.
No. Evelyn.
Silent, O Moyle, be the roar of thy water.
Break not, ye breezes, your chain of repose,
while murmuring mournfully Lear's lonely daughter
tells me who the night star her tale of woes.
When shall the swan
sing?